From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 356, recorded live Thursday, January 24th, 2013. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support, online at telerik.com, and by franklins.net, training developers to work smarter, and now offering GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Willow Brew from Geeks Without Bounds, an accelerator for humanitarian projects.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I've got Willow Brew from Geeks Without Bounds on the phone. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Lovely, lovely. I am checking out your website, and I love this. An accelerator for humanitarian projects. You get geeks and charities together, don't you?
Sort of. Less so with charities, more with nonprofits and humanitarian response groups, disaster response groups, who would benefit from their geeky talents.
Ah, okay. So, like if there's a disaster, if there's a hurricane, crisis camps, things like that.
Yeah, we help out with response, the tools that people use when they're in the field.
Okay. And how is this organized? I mean, do you do this on a monthly basis, or are there teams that go like quarterly? Is this like Doctors Without Borders except with programmers?
That was the initial idea, but now each accelerator round is 6 months. And so we open up a round for applications every 6 months and people apply, and then we provide them mentorship during that time period. The other things that we're involved with, like the hackathons and the crisis camps and everything else, happen on a much more regular schedule.
Okay. Okay. And is this something that I would have to take time off of work, or how would I do this if I were going to be a geek without bounds?
Right now it's volunteer time. We don't have a way of, we're hoping eventually to be able to provide teams with stipends so that they can really focus on building their tool. Mm-hmm. But right now we're not in a place to do that. So it is something that's spare time.
Mm-hmm. When I think about Superstorm Sandy or something like that, and that you might need crisis response, I usually think of young people who somehow either have a low financial burn rate. Maybe they're they just live in a house with a bunch of other folks. So the idea of taking some time off of work and then flying across the country and shovel ready, get on the ground and help people out is one thing. Are these geeks doing that? Are they kind of taking vacation or taking time off, flying across the country and then working on the ground? Or is this something that they're doing with GitHub and they're doing it distributed?
There are some people who do show up to the event. I was one. One of the things about either digital humanitarian response or a volunteer technical community response is that you can do it from your own home. There was one thing that was built called MapMill, which was basically hot or not for damage assessment, where after a natural disaster, there's a group called Civil Air Patrol that flies and they take aerial images of an area. Mm-hmm. And then what a group did was, and this happened in advance, and then we deployed it during Sandy, they had built out a way for those images to be geolocated, and then people can flip through and say, there's no damage, there's light damage, there's heavy damage. And that was crowdsourced, essentially. And no one had to leave their couch. And that was done by people like Skylar and Kate from Humanitarian Open Street Map Team, HOT. And that was something that then you have a heat map of where damage is, and FEMA and whoever else can go in and figure out where to go instead of waiting for official requests. It's really, really cool.
Do tools like that? That seems amazing. I would guess that the hardest part would be letting other agencies know that those tools exist. It seems like I'm always hearing about amazing tools or utilities, and then I wonder, do they become the standard tool that everyone knows about, or do you still struggle? Everyone should know about this freaking tool.
Well, the thing about when you're talking to well-established groups like Civil Air Patrol and FEMA and National Guard, they have to use tools that they know can work. You can't use something that is under the release early and release often will fix bugs in post. Like, it has to work. People are relying on it, and so there's a really high barrier to getting people to use new tools. But one of the other things that we did in the field was start using Hackpad, which is my favorite co-editing platform for documents. And that's one of the things where you can just put it in front of people and they know how to use it. But because it is live collaboration, it's not something that you can use in the field when all of the networks are down. It's not asynchronous.
I see. So there are like real-time, relied upon, maybe older, but totally people can count on them type tools. And then there are more, hacked up tools that might give you extra information and extra power, but people know not to rely on them.
Yeah, and also there's there are worries about standards and what you're asking people to use, because you can't, how can I say this politely? When people are under duress, they like to create something. Like, when your world has been turned upside down, you usually use whatever skill set you have in order to gain some sense of control. Mm-hmm. When you have geeks building tools and people who are really good at getting the word out, you can create a whole lot more chaos in what is already a desperate situation.
Mm.
And so one of the things that Geeks Without Bounds does is kind of play buffer between people who have incredible talent and could really build some things that will change the way we do response and the way we live our lives. But that they need to curate it a little bit more before they put it out into the wild.
I see. So, I like that. You're a buffer. You provide focus in program management, and you know, something tragic has happened, and I really want to help, and I really know that I can help out, but I would make it worse if I just jumped in.
Right, and the hands are extra hands are always useful, and that's one of the reasons that a platform like MapMill was so great, is it gave an outlet for that desire to help.
Mm-hmm.
People will show up regardless. And it's important to, as my friend Matt says, design for the messiness. It's going to be chaotic. You have to figure that out, figure out how. And it's disrespectful for people who show up and want to help out to tell them, no, go home.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Is the number one thing when thinking about things in terms of crisis response, mapping? Is this all mostly GIS type stuff? Geolocation and geographic data? That seems like that would be the thing that would be the most important when you think about crisis response.
It's a really big deal. You also, in that it ties to volunteer dispatch and resource management,
mm-hmm.
because you need to know where your resources are going. One of the things that that Occupy Sandy did really, really well was, instead of trying to recreate entire resource management structures and how do you deal with incoming donation requests and people bringing things and everything else, and just used Amazon gift registry for weddings. And that was a really awesome established tool that got deployed in a really neat way.
That is an interesting idea, though, that you said that people want to make stuff when they're stressed out. I mean, they want to make stuff, change stuff, control stuff. Like a couple of days ago, I was really stressed out, and I did two things. I cleaned my office, and I got a haircut. Neither of those things moved the crisis forward, but I sure felt better afterwards. But when putting together projects for a crisis, you could take something like Google Calendar, Google Docs, and make a real-time collaboration system that might be like less than polished, but certainly would work, and they're totally reliable tools on an infrastructure you can count on.
Yeah, and that was exactly what Occupy Sandy had started to do, is they were using Google Spreadsheets and Google Maps, and then moved to Google Fusion Tables to update their website automatically. And then they moved to a more specific platform, which mm-hmm. is called Sahana Eden. It's an open source, really cool, specific to disaster and humanitarian response. But they were incredible. Like the amount of chaos that was going on in those spaces, and that they were using their community organizing skill set to do response was, yeah, it was great.
What other organizations do you work with? Like, I know that there is a platform, I think it's called Ushahidi.
Yeah, so Ushahidi means to testify, and it was initially used to track election results in Uganda. I forget.
Kenya?
I'm a horrible person for not knowing specifically where it started.
Right, it's Swahili for testimony, and it was used in the 2007 Kenyan election, as I recall.
Yes, there we go. Thank you. And they are great, and that gets used. That was used also in Sandy, and it's pretty diverse in how it can be used. There's also a group that's rebuilt parts of it called Tarifa, which does it's more like 311 for slums of what's going on in your area, and it's less in the moment based and more long term systemic. How are we fixing things?
Mm-hmm. And how many of these kind of different projects exist? I mean, if they're mapping and they're trying to track response and keep track of comments and how we can help and activism, I mean, there's activism and news organization, and on one side of the spectrum, and on the other side there's more traditional kind of response. How many different platforms are there, and do you guys compete, and or do you all just use whatever software you can?
There are a lot of platforms. The issue is what sort of support exists for them, as is often the case in open source communities. Of, well, sure, there are lots of little tools, but what actually has the documentation and people who can help you out and everything else? In general, people get along pretty well, and we've done a good job of making it clear that by helping each other, we're all better off. Sometimes you still run into, because none of us are in it for money, there's always a problem of who gets recognized for what. But that's the case in anything. And we're working on repositories of these tools. Code for America has a great, great repo of just a bunch of different platforms that people have built out. And Random Hacks of Kindness, rhok.org, has done a good job of collecting challenges that people who do response feel they face.
Mm-hmm. When I hear about these kinds of things from, and forgive me, I'm speaking from the point of view of someone who's worked in private industry for, you know, in software for 20 years, and I think about young people, I think about people living out of backpacks, and I think, this is not for me. Like, I can't, how can I get involved, right? I've got a house, and I got a mortgage, and I got kids to take to school. help me bridge the gap between what I perceive, correctly or incorrectly, as young people activism that, you know, I can't just throw a MacBook Air in a backpack and take off and help this. I got to pay the mortgage. How do you and other organizations and people who work in those organizations pay the rent and survive and not just go and work at a bank somewhere? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Why don't you just quit and go work for a bank? help me work through those multiple questions that are right there so that I can feel more like I could get involved. You know what I'm saying? Because this all seems very abstract, and I'm assuming that the listener is also thinking, well, gosh, good for them, but how can I help?
Yeah. So there's a great organization called Benetech that has a program called Social Coding for Good that links up people who work at large organizations or corporations and mostly open source platforms that could really use their help. And they have a good focus also on humanitarian and disaster response. And so they come in and help facilitate a few hours, and everybody applies their skill set that they've developed and use every day in their corporate life. And they help out other groups, and everybody is better off because of that. As far as being the traveling, the tech nomad, which is definitely
tech
what
nomad.
I'm a tech nomad.
That's awesome.
Or post-geographic, depending on how you want to say it.
Sure.
I am certainly in that category. You know, I'm the punk kid with the blue hair that shows up with the the Crust Punk patches on my vest, but I'm also the only person wearing a tie at a military deployment. My friends call it satire punk. But it's possible and it's a lovely life, but it's also very, very different. The way we pay our bills is through corporate sponsorship. Right now, we're also working on some grants, and we are contracted out sometimes to do events for people. We did an event this past weekend called Everyone Hacks in San Francisco, which was education-focused but radically inclusive. And it was super fun, and it was requested by HP and PG&E. And mm-hmm. so they cover the costs and some of the organizational costs as well.
Okay. So for you, I mean, it is you and these different organizations, you're big in the sense that you are formal nonprofits. We can donate to you. You're 501(c)(3)s, right?
501(c)(3), yeah. We will totally take your money, and that's sometimes the best thing you can do is give money. This is the part that I suck at. That's why I'm glad Johnny Diggs is on our side. I think it's guob.org/sponsorship or something.
Right, you can Geeks Without Bounds, GWOB.org, and then you can find it from there.
Yeah. And stuff. Give us money. That's cool if you want to. Or give us code, like give us time, and that's always super, super useful.
So this brings up the kind of the thing that I wanted to get to, which is I always get emails from people saying, I want to get involved in open source and I want to work on this. And inevitably, I'll say, well, you know, go find a project on GitHub and figure something out. But I've always thought that combining charity with open source is like the ideal. And maybe charity, yeah. Maybe charity isn't the right word, but I mean the word charity just in the sense of not just giving back to your favorite object relational mapper, but you know mm-hmm. something that's more fundamental. Do you think that if someone is listening and they've been thinking about open source or they've been thinking about writing code for the commons, that talking to an organization like yours is a good way to do that? To combine both of their passions, giving back and giving back?
Absolutely. I think that's wonderful. And not just in that it's good for them and it's good for those projects, but in that these projects get deployed into developing areas and they get deployed into our own government structures. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good vector for basically infiltrating new ideas and ideals into very established and sometimes struggling systemic problem areas is how I will put that politely.
I recently, one of my favorite charities is this charity called the Red Pump Project. And while it's not a response-based situation like some of the things that you work on, they do HIV and AIDS awareness for women and girls. And my friend Lovey is one of the founders of that, and she needed a program written. And I think we sat down for like 2 hours, and it completely changed how they work on stuff. And all it was something that pulled Google, you know, their website, their blog, some content management system, and Google spreadsheets, and now it's saved her 100 hours, and it took me two. But people say, how do you meet them? How do you hook up with them? Like, that would be ideal. Like, take smart programmer, take organization that needs smart programmer. I've got 2 hours, I've got 5 hours, I've got maybe 8 hours. Like, I think any programmer could take 8 hours and find that time.
Yeah.
But how do you have the dating service for those two organizations?
Yeah, hackathons is speed dating between hackers and the organizations they might help. Is totally spot on. And one of the reasons that your venture was as successful as it was is because you talked to her about what her needs were. A lot of the time, people who are techie have the answer before you've even asked the question. And you end up creating more noise, not refining the signal. And so by sitting down and figuring out where technology actually applies, we can't solve people problems with tech, but we can ease the transaction. We can make it easier for people to do good work. And so go to a hackathon. That's one of the things that you can do. You'll learn a whole lot. You'll meet other people. Mm-hmm. And they can be super fun. And you'll find an organization that you might want to go into every once in a while. It's a new kind of community service. Go in and give some time, make sure all their network cables are unkinked and everything else, and sit down with them about an app that might work for them.
But aren't there different kinds of hackathons? Like, I see hackathons sponsored by organizations. Like, there might be like Twilio, and it's a hackathon sponsored by Twilio where they'll, you know, go and hack on our product. I know that I think Couchbase had a hackathon in Portland recently. Are there charitable organization or fast deployment of assistance based hackathons that I can find?
Absolutely. So I'm doing one next weekend, not this one upcoming, but the one after, in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, with a group called Digital Democracy, and we're focused on gender-based violence. So when there's a short code that when someone is affected by gender-based violence, usually rape, they can call this short code and they hear a real person on the other end of the line who is helping them with where a doctor that will understand is, where a counselor is, where to get legal help, things like that. And what we're helping to do is make an updatable map of where those resources are, because they always move around and close. We're working on visualizing the data so it's not just response, but it can become a policy issue. Mm-hmm. And we're working on handing it off to the local population, so making sure that the code is in a recognizable format and that it's all understood. We're not just parachuting in, building something and then leaving, mm-hmm. and it'll just deteriorate over time. So there are things that are very specific like that. There's also Random Acts of Kindness, which I already mentioned, that's happens twice a year. We're on the same, their event is when we onboard teams because we're partners with them. Mm-hmm. And the one that happens the first weekend of June will also be National Day of Civic Hacking, which just got announced on the White House blog.
Ooh.
Where I insisted we have Oxford commas because I care.
and bonus points for the geeks who understand why Oxford commas are important.
Thank you. I love debating about that. And so that's going to be on seeing contributing code as a civic service, mm-hmm. and the need to be an engaged citizen, even if you're sitting behind a computer screen all day. So there are specific ones like that. There, it's basically a hackathon is a gathering of people around an objective. And sometimes the objective is hacking on a Tropo platform or whatever, mm-hmm. or it's an AT&T hackathon, which I helped out with some for a while. And yeah, it's good times.
And I'm looking at your website here. If people go to gwob.org and then click on Get Involved, there's some initial things about how you can help with Geeks Without Bounds, Advocate, and Local Geek, and things like that. But if you scroll down, you have gone and created help beyond an event. And there's probably 6-7 different other organizations and projects that people can get involved with. So really, it's just a matter of the willpower at that point, right? I mean, if you have a talent that you want to share, there's really no excuse. It just seems like discovery is a problem.
Yeah. I know that I also suffer from this, of just the assumption that if you do good work, people will pay attention and notice. Mm-hmm. And learning how to publicize the things that we do is important, and I'm learning. So one of the things that we do is try to advocate for other projects that are going on and see if people want to sign on to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting involved is a problem because it's hurting cats. Right? And that...
Yeah.
Geeks... go ahead.
They're funneling kittens.
Funneling kittens, hurting cats, yes, exactly. I mean,
and
it's
that's
like...
That's another reason to go to an event, because it's super low barrier to entry. They usually feed you. There are people there that will answer your questions directly, and they help structure your efforts. And if you continue on, that's... You are a champ, and if you don't, it's okay. You've learned something, and so has everyone else. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think is really impressive about what you guys are doing is if you go and click on sponsorship and click on transparent accounting, and you don't always see this. This is, you can dig up the accounting for an organization, but you've actually got your Google spreadsheet kind of embedded in the page here, and it's like, look, there's your salary, right? It's like...
I have to update that for 2013. I think I need to embed 2013 instead of 2012.
No, it says 2013.
Yes, victory.
Victory.
I'm on top of it.
I just think that's very impressive because I think that your point, I'm hearing a couple of points. Give money, right? Like the easiest possible thing you can do is throw money at the problem and you guys mm-hmm. will figure out the right way to use the money. But often people will say, well, you know, if I give this much, if I give $100, you know, only $3 is going to end up on the ground. Well, I mean, here you've actually got truly transparent accounting. You can see your salary. You can see where you gave the money, how much the about page cost. That is really cool. Like, I think every geek-based charitable organization should do that. Like, holy crap, they put the master budget in a Google spreadsheet that everyone can view? You know, that's epic. I love that. Like, thanks. You even have, like, a line here for, you know, how much you spent on swag. That's exactly how it should be done. So that makes me feel more comfortable about giving to an organization like yours. But
thanks. It's important that we are held accountable. There's a dearth of what are considered charitable organizations that don't use their funding well. Mm-hmm. And initially, making the budget transparent was a selfish act because I am new to this. And I want to be sure that if anyone is supporting us, they have a chance to be like, are you sure you're doing this efficiently? Have you thought about this thing over here? And it's something that I want to see all over the place.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, the Random Hacks of Kindness section on your site and also the website still say 2012. Are there going to be Random Hacks of Kindness in 2013?
Absolutely. There will be one. They happen the first weekend of June and the first weekend of December, and that is consistent. That's been that way for the past few years.
Okay, cool. So the dates are just the month is the same. The year is just it's a matter of like always writing the wrong number on the check. I always write 2012 for several years after 2012 is over. Well, this sounds very exciting, and I think that I feel like I could point people now at these different websites and organizations, and they could feel like they could get involved. They can get on your schedule. They can give money. They can say, I have these skills. Can you help me line these skills up with an organization or a response that might need it? Do you have some examples of a response or a time when some geek skills really made a difference?
Absolutely. So there was a hackathon that happened in Florida that generated a thing called Tweet 3PO.
I don't know what it is, but it sounds awesome.
So it was because the local police had opened up their feed, their blotter, not for violent crimes, because those are sensitive, right? You don't want to say where you're pursuing someone, mm-hmm. but there's a tree down, or there's a street closed, or there was a break-in a few days later, or whatever. It's classified by neighborhood, and so you can see what's going on where. And you can subscribe to the Twitter feed of your neighborhood. So there was a break-in in this apartment, and it ended up that there had also been some violence associated with it. And because people were subscribed to this Twitter feed, they saw a person that was acting very strangely, and they were on the lookout for it. And so they were able to better find that person and bring them to justice, as it were. That's something that Diggs can say more on, because he was there mm-hmm. also. But it's interesting to me as a way of being more socially involved and in a way that has camaraderie, that you can loop people in and be welcoming on the same platform that allowed people to call shenanigans, as it were.
Yeah, I think really location-based information is where the idea like there something has occurred and I could help, or something has occurred and I could take action. I know that a couple of months ago, totally random, but a couple of months ago, someone crashed their car into a power pole or whatever and knocked it down. And all the neighbors were out, and you know, they're all like walking around the street, like, what's going on? What happened? I went onto Twitter and clicked on search nearby tweets. And it's like, oh, a guy ran his car into the thing. And, you know, and it's like suddenly the idea, like, I could look at my Twitter feed, or I could subscribe to some local random person, but that's not really feasible. I'm not going to be able to sort signal from noise. But when I clicked on nearby tweets, which then took all the geo-tagged tweets and put them into a map, I was like, oh, this person looks like they're near the problem. Click. Oh, looks like someone crashed. When you apply that to more interesting things like police response, disaster response, you know, someone has broken into the plaid pantry down the street or the 7-Eleven and they're running north. Oh, wow, I can take action. I'm right there. That becomes really, really powerful.
There's a really great group called Humanity Road that does a lot of that. They do. They watch for tweets in an area and respond to people directly. When people are tweeting that their phone isn't working, they're saying a lot of people are using their phone, and so you're not going to get the bandwidth you need to be able to make a call. And so send a text and that sort of thing. And it's people helping people, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, and I think also from a geek perspective, getting to work on tech that they may have written off, like SMS is a hugely useful thing. And sending out alert-based or informational SMSs over a blanket area that has to do with geolocated specific information with regard to either something like you mentioned, violence in an area, or whether it be election results, or whether it be disaster response. There's more than just email and Twitter and things like that. Getting involved in all those multiple channels, I think, is really exciting. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Folks can go up to Geeks Without Bounds, GWOB.org. You can click on Get Involved. You can see right there their embedded Google spreadsheet with their transparent accounting. You can donate money. You can get on Willow's extremely busy schedule. And also, I think you've got some of your responsibilities are transferred over to someone named Lindsay right now.
Yeah, so I'm going to go to Boston to do research with the Center for Civic Media out of MIT and at Berkman Center out of Harvard if they'll have me. So Lindsay is taking on a lot of the day-to-day interactions.
That's very exciting. Well, that's great. Well, I'll also put your Twitter account that people can follow you and see your adventures, and also follow, you said, Diggs and Lindsay from Geeks Without Bounds and get involved.
Hooray. Thank you so much.
Hooray. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.